This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Well, Happy New Year, everyone. And I am so happy that today I have two of my very favorite authors on. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to Robert Crace. Of course, he is a Mystery Writer of America grandmaster, a best-selling author, and everyone knows his wonderful books. But first, I'm waiting now for Brad Taylor to come on the line. I hope that you have read Brad Taylor's books because they are just wonderful. His series features Pike Logan. It's a wonderful series. This new book is the 12th in the series. It's called Operator Down, and it is going to be released on January 9th. You can pre-order it, and you should, because it is an exciting book. As always, Brad Taylor just knows what he is writing about. He is one of those guys who has a sort of, I think he has an inside line to a lot of very important people, because he is always ahead of the game when it comes to writing his books. In his one of his books, The Insider Threat, he was writing about ISIS exploits, and that was long before anybody had even heard about ISIS. And then in The Widow's Strike, he was writing about Chechen terrorists in America. And, of course, that was before the Boston Marathon bombing. And in the Polaris Protocol, he was writing about Edward Snowden and U.S. intelligence problems long before anybody had even had it as a twinkle in their eye. So it is always exciting to read his books. He is, of course, a fantastic person. He was in the Army Infantry and Special Forces, and for 8 years he was in the 1st Special Forces Operational Detachment, which is, of course, Delta, and he served in Iraq and Afghanistan and all sorts of other classified locations. But in all of those places, I know that he gathered information and he sort of tucked it away until he had time to actually sit down and start writing. And he is one of those very prolific guys. He's generally writing like 2 books a year, but this time, this book, the new one called Operator Down, is coming out a year after the previous book. And I think partly it's because there's a lot of research, and I know that he did a lot of work on this new book. I have always said that one of the things I love so much about reading is that it does take you away from things that are sort of happening in the world. In this case, it sort of puts you in that world, but in a nice way, so you can really enjoy yourself. And he's always so, his descriptions of locations is fantastic. Now, many writers, as you're reading thrillers, you'll say, well, is that place real? Is that place real? But the wonderful thing about Brad Taylor is that his places are always real. You can actually walk the streets and go to the restaurants that he writes about. And since I travel so much and I have been to so many of the locations that he writes about, I always feel right at home when I get into his novels. And if you haven't traveled to all the these places, you will find that his descriptions are so good that you feel like you're there. So that's I think that's one of the wonderful things about his books, that you really feel like you, first of all, you like the characters. I think that of all the sort of heroes out there, Pike Logan is one that you can really relate to. There's something very special about this character and about his relationship with the task force that he works with, and to, you know, solve the problems of the world. But they do it in a very fascinating way. And the nice thing is that he has a great relationship with the people in the task force, and it makes for wonderful reading. So I'm really looking forward to talking to him about the new book. And it's funny. Of course, you probably have seen Brad on television. He's quite often on. They call him in to talk about events that are happening around the world when it comes to actions in that perhaps Delta Force type people might be involved in, and he can always offer his expertise. He is, of course, he has a master's of science in defense analysis, and so really it's called asymmetric threats, and he knows about these asymmetric threats, and so it's always exciting when he, you know, includes all of this information in his books, and you will really like his writing. If you haven't read it, the new book is a stand. You could just start with this book, Operator Downer. You can go all the way back to his first books and do the whole series, which, you know, in this time, because it's you have a apparently many of you have a long winter up there, and even down here in Florida, it's a little bit cool, so you want to be tucked in the house and have a nice cup of coffee or tea and maybe some biscotti, which reminds me, I just sent my son, who's probably listening right now up in Madison, I sent him his care package of biscotti so that if he's snowed in, he has he can sit there and read, and he got a lot of books also. We sent him up a lot of books, and so he has books, and he has biscotti, and coffee or tea. I think he was into tea, and now I think he's moved on to coffee. So like his mother, because of course I drink a lot of coffee, but that's because I'm a youper, and people and with a Finnish background, and Finns are the world's greatest drinkers of coffee, and so I drink a lot of coffee, and for a long time my son didn't drink coffee, but I think he is now into coffee. But definitely with his mummy's biscotti. My goddaughter, Kanisha, said last week, she said to me, you still send care packages, you know, to a graduate student. And I said, yes, I have to send care packages. I send care packages every month because, you know, it doesn't matter how old he gets. And I still think of him as a baby, of course. And so I like to know that he's got some good home cooking there. And so I still send him a care package. And I think he likes it. I have a feeling he likes it, especially if he's going to be snowed in. I am so happy that we're not going to be snowed in. But I think I have Brad Thor on the phone right now. I'm just looking at Big Ed in the control room. And so I should be getting a signal soon that Brad Taylor's on the phone, and okay, is Brad there? Hi, Brad.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, great. Well, Colonel Taylor, it is so great to talk to you again. I think last year I talked to you exactly a year ago and a day, and that was, of course, we were talking about, you know, I think I embarrassed you because I said, well, do you stand in front of the mirror every morning and say, you know, I am so good. I'm Delta Force. My goodness, I can do all of these wonderful things. I was just doing a promo here because I planned to have you earlier. So I've been talking to you about you for 10 minutes here, and I was thinking, wow, you know, you are so amazing, and I even found a new word about you, which when a word comes along, I like to find new words, and I had never heard anybody described as mediagenic. Did you know do you know that's what they write about you now? That you're mediagenic?
No. My wife just tells me to do the dishes, so that's pretty much it.
Well, you are so amazing, and I always love your books, and I love this new book because, as I was telling my listeners, that, you know, I've traveled around the world a lot, and I lived in many strange places, and so I relate to your locations, and this new book, of course, is just wonderful. It's called Operator Down, and, of course, it's a Pike Logan thriller, and the wonderful thing is it brings back two of my favorite characters, because my husband is from Israel. And so I relate.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I relate to all of these locations, and I just love it.
Well, I hope I got everything right then.
You are famous for being accurate on your locations and that people can actually go to the places that you've written about. And that's true. So, you know, I want to say that when you write about Israel, you're accurate, and I love the new story. Do you want to just tell people a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. I last time we spoke, I was still doing two books a year.
I know.
And this was the first time I'm going back to one book a year, so I had a lot of time to kind of think about what I wanted to do.
And you made us all suffer and wait.
Well, if you'd have seen me at the end of Ring of Fire, you'd have said, give that guy a break, he's going crazy. But I had, what I want to do is I had basically three things. I wanted to bring Aaron and Shoshana back, which are the Israeli Mossad operatives. I wanted to make it a personal story of ICE, some kind of cataclysmic world-ending event. And I wanted to go somewhere where I hadn't been before. And so since Aaron and Shoshana are Israeli, I started doing research in Israel, trying to find some kind of thread, some kind of plot line that would energize them into putting them in the book. And I hit upon the Israeli diamond exchange, the diamond trade, which is really big in Israel. I didn't realize it.
Oh, yes.
And so I started doing all the research in the diamond trade, which then going upstream from that led me into Africa, where the diamond mines are. And I started to have an idea about having a coup in Africa tied into the diamond trade. I started doing the research in Africa, and I always like to go on the ground and do research. And most of the places that are unstable with diamonds in Africa, I didn't want to go to, like Sierra Leone, something like that.
Yeah, good
and
idea.
I found Lesotho, which produces some of the largest gem-quality diamonds in the world, which is a microstate inside the state of South Africa. I didn't even know it existed. It's kind of like Vatican City. It's a state within a state. And so that's where the plot line started going from there.
And you almost got, you did get stopped there because they thought you were a spy.
Yeah. So sometimes doing on-the-ground research doesn't pay off. Well, actually, it paid off really well because they learned a lot about Lesotho politics. I was doing, since it is about a coup, I hit the ground in Lesotho and started planning a coup. I'm ex-special forces, so I knew what I was looking for.
Uh-huh.
Taking pictures of the parliament and the police headquarters and things like that. And I located the special forces base where their special forces regiment was housed. Went to the front gate, started listening to information from the front gate guard, just acting like a tourist. And I got rolled up by two counterintelligence guys. They threw me in the back of a big Suburban and hauled me on the base and threw me into a concrete interrogation facility, and I got interrogated for about 6 hours.
Okay, well, that's getting a little too close to the story.
Yeah, everything on me was just incredibly incriminating. So I said, I'm a tourist, I'm here, just, well, why'd you bring me in here? And they're looking at my camera, and I've got, there's no tourist pictures on the camera. Like I said, there's pictures of the radio station, the TV station, the police headquarters. There's a picture of the prime minister's residence. We're in the picture as a sign saying no photos. It was just really incriminating.
Well, I hope your wife didn't know about that at the time. She
didn't know about it. She said she was getting worried because I hadn't called home yet. My phone didn't work inside Lesotho, so I had to wait till I get on Wi-Fi and we could instant message using the iPhone application. And it got later, later, later. And by the time I had Wi-Fi, I had all these messages from her. You okay? You okay? And so I texted back and said, I got rolled up by counterintelligence. She immediately texted back, you liar. She didn't believe me.
Well, you are an amazing author. And as I was telling my listeners earlier, that if they haven't read your books, they've missed something amazing. But I think they have, because I've been talking about your books for a long time, because, as I said, there are a lot of thriller writers out there, but you do really capture that immediacy, so that we feel like we are actually in the locations with your people. And the task force, of course, is not real, or perhaps it is, and you won't tell us. But the one, you cannot talk, and just like you cannot talk about all of the places that you went when you were in Delta Force. So it's just there's an authenticity to your books that is very compelling.
Well, it's one of the reasons I go on the ground and do the research is we used to have a saying, sights, sounds, and smells of the battlefield. Once you get on the ground, there's always something in every single country, which is the strangest thing ever. And you don't see it until you hit the ground. And I'd sprinkle those in the book because they always strike me as unique. Like I was, for instance, for No Fortunate Son, I was in Cork, Ireland, and we went to an Irish pub, of course. And in the back of the pub, you know how everybody has vending machines? Well, in the back of this pub, they had a Pringles can dispenser vending machine where you put a dollar in and get a can of Pringles potato chips. It's the strangest thing ever. It looked like a revolving. It was a weird thing. You always see those kind of things in all the various countries. I'm sure they have them in every pub there. But to me, I was like, what in the world is that? But you wouldn't find that out unless you went over there and you put that in the book. Somebody who's been to that country would go, I know exactly what he's talking about.
Exactly. It's like, you know, when you, in the Ghosts of War, it was about Poland. And all of your stories, I was telling everyone how you are always so ahead of the game, like in the Insider Threat, where you are talking about ISIS, and in the Widow Strike, and you're talking about Chechen terrorists before the Boston Marathon bombing. You're always sort of ahead of the game. And, of course, Poland is important because they are resisting. They are really trying to keep their country sort of intact. And over the years, they've been so ripped apart by everybody. So it was nice to, I've been to Poland, so I understand what it's like. And
that's where Pike Logan gets the beef jerky there. He feeds it and he has the beef jerky and gives it to Aaron. I bought the beef jerky over there, and I'm metrically challenged. So the guy doesn't speak English. I see the sign. It's it's a pittance. It was like $5 for a kilo of jerky. And so I said, well, I'll have that. Point the sign. And in my head, I'm thinking, a liter is less than a gallon. A kilo has got to be less than a pound. And so I end up getting, 2.2 pounds of beef jerky. I'm like, what in the world?
Well, that's why I love your books. And now I haven't been to South Africa. I think I was just too afraid to go there myself. But you do manage to make us feel like we're there with you.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. South Africa is a really unique country, and I enjoyed running around there. And it's a lot of things, like on my way out, I was flying out of Johannesburg, coming back to the States, and I had I think it was like 6 hours wait. I just had nothing to do. I had checked out of the hotel, and now I had about 6 hours to wait. Oh, I know what it was. I came out of Lesotho. By the time my connecting flight was 6 hours later. So I went down to Sandton, found a Hard Rock Cafe, and inside there, the manager was from Texas. I mean, unless you're going out and exploring, you'd never find that out. And that made the book.
Well, it's like the time that I arrived in Poland late at night, midnight, woke up at 6 o'clock, went down to the coffee shop, and they're playing, Texas songs. And I said, what? And it turned out, the owner was from Texas, and right there in a little town in Poland, this is the exciting thing about travel is you do find all of this fascinating stuff, and that's what you keep in your books, and that's why your readers love you. And I just want everyone to get out there. Now the book comes out on January 9th, and it is a fantastic book. And I've already told my listeners that they have to go to your website, Brad Taylor, and they have to get this new book, Operator Down, because it's going to be a bestseller again.
I hope so. Yeah, they can read an excerpt at bradtaylorbooks.com. There's excerpts of all my books, and they can read an excerpt of Operator Down.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on today. I'm cutting this a little bit short because I'm going to do also today a tribute to Jerry Yellen, who was the last fighter pilot, and he passed away last week. But he was on the show 3 weeks ago. And he's 93 years old, and he came on the program, and I had no idea, and he was just a wonderful guest. And then he told me he had fallen down the night before, but he still came on the program. I mean, at 93, and he was on for like almost 30 minutes. And so I'm going to do a special tribute to him today at the end of the program.
By all means.
But I will keep talking about you, and I will keep telling everyone to get out there and get your new book. And I look forward to talking to you when the new book comes out.
Okay, I appreciate it. Look forward to doing the same.
Okay. Thanks so much, Brad. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Whoa, that was wonderful to talk to Brad Taylor. And now this is like one of these days, wonderful day. And now I have on the phone Robert Crace. Robert, are you there?
I'm here, Patsy. How you doing?
Oh, wow. I am thrilled. You know, I was just talking to Brad Taylor. So I'm having...
Oh, terrific.
I'm having this fantastic day. What a way to start the new year.
You have a stacked up today. Yeah,
yes, I really do. It's, you know, it's wonderful. And I'm so excited to have you on, of course. You know, I don't even know where to start with you because your books are so wonderful and you have been a favorite for so long. Of course, you are a Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster. And my very first Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster was Carolyn Hart. And when
I love Carolyn. I love Carolyn. She's a dear friend of mine.
She is such a lovely person, so warm and so kind. And so she sort of steered me on to Grandmaster. So you are my 9th Grandmaster. And
I may be your 9th Grandmaster, but I'll try to be your best Grandmaster.
Well, I don't have any doubt about it because you are so amazing. And I was thinking, you know, I have, of course, a lot of your books, but I'm first editions because I usually get them when they come out. I have I had 6,000 books. Now I have only 4,000 because I had to sort of cut it down. But I was so sad that I did not get your first edition of The Monkey's Raincoat, which of course was your very first book. Do you know how much the signed first edition is selling for?
No, I have no idea.
$899.
No way.
Yes, it's on eBay, but that's the UK one. And I think the reason is the cover for the UK edition, for the British edition, has the Mickey Mouse watch.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah, I remember that.
That is a beautiful cover, and it was much better. That cover, I think, was better than the American version, and I don't know why they didn't use that, because that one has it has a gun, the Mickey Mouse watch, which, of course, is very significant to you, and a crushed Budweiser can. And that book is $899, and maybe after today's show, it's going to sell for $900.
I should have bought a box of the things when I could.
Yeah. I mean,
I have to tell you, Patsy, when I was writing the first book, when I was writing it, I was creating Elvis Cole and Joe Pike and the other characters. I never, ever in a million years anticipated that any of this would happen, that one day that book would be selling for $800 on a collector's market, or that I would have, gained the readership that I've gained over time. If you'd have told me this would happen, I would have thought you'd been drinking too much. You know, I was just trying to write a single story. Just what? Please, let me just write a novel that works, that it won't embarrass me. That was my goal. And the fact that over time, and over now, The Wanted is the 17th Elvis Cole book. Over the course of the 17 books, that so many people have come to Elvis Cole and enjoy him, and the readership has grown this large and this enthusiastic, is something I didn't anticipate and would never have believed would happen.
Well, it is quite, really quite amazing. For of course, you were a small screenwriter, because it's mostly television,
yeah,
I think.
TV writer. Yeah, I feel like a Trivial Pursuit question for 80s television.
You know,
I was a baby writer. I was really young when I moved from Louisiana to Los Angeles. I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to make a living writing, and I thought, well, you know, maybe if I could get into TV, it'd be a good way. I can write scripts and make a living on it, and then write other things. I didn't even anticipate the success there, but I got involved in TV, and was, in retrospect now I know, I was so privileged to work with actors like Jack Klugman and Tyne Daly and Sharon Gless and really talented TV writer producers like Stephen Bochco and Michael Kozel from Hill Street Blues, Anthony Yurkovich. I could go on and listen, but those days were like writer school to me. I didn't know what I was doing when I went to Los Angeles.
But it's a good training ground.
I told a few short stories, but nothing else. And those I learned enormous lessons from those people.
Writing for television is a good training ground because you do have to learn dialogue, and you do and that's why I think your books are so popular, because they read like a film. So you know you're very visual. Now I can say that because I'm a script writer, and I had three of my films optioned in Hollywood, and they were featured on, you know, a full page ad in the Hollywood Reporter, and so I was really hopeful. But now you know Hollywood, and you know how they turn around.
Well, you know, they have a term for it. It's called development hell.
Oh, I've been in that for years.
Sure, and as have I. I mean, I've also been very, very fortunate. One of my standalone novels, a book I wrote called Hostage, was made into a film with Bruce Willis, and I was fortunate that it was actually filmed and actually released. But I have other books, The 2-Minute Rule, which was a novel I wrote about a reformed bank robber. The 2-Minute Rule was optioned, but it hasn't been made. A book I wrote called Demolition Angel, about a female bomb technician, an LAPD female bomb technician. It was sold to the movies, but it's never been made. So I've got those projects, too. They're just sort of out there, and people option them or own them, and nothing ever seems to get made. I guess that's sort of like the curse of Hollywood.
It is, and that's why I'm here in Clearwater, Florida, because I couldn't handle it. And also, the important thing to learn when you are in Los Angeles, it's really good if you have an intellectual property lawyer. And I was too young to understand that in those days. A lot of things can happen in Hollywood. But for you,
well,
of course.
You know what? That's one of the reasons I'm, all my books are set here. And I think that's one of the reasons, which is the thing that you said, anything can happen. I get asked all the time, about the setting for my novels. And I tell people, well, Los Angeles is actually a character in my book. Los Angeles is every bit as much of a character as is Elvis Cole and Joe Pike. I love L.A. I don't like the traffic. I mean, let's be honest. But I love living here. I love the diversity of it. I love the fact that I can get so many different types of food, because I'm a real foodie. And I love the lay of the land, the outlook, the fact that it's a magnet for dreamers. Now, anything can happen here. And for a crime writer like me, you know, that gives me all the colors in the rainbow on my palette, and I can paint with all of them to create the stories I create with. So there's a lot of potential for crime fiction here.
But I think it's so much more fun to be a novelist. You know, I was, of course, Sue Grafton just passed away, and, you know, she was in writing for Hollywood for films. And she said the worst thing about it was that she hated being told, you know, redo the plot, redo the characters, you know. So and the freedom of being able to write a novel, and you do it yourself, and nobody can tell you what to write.
Well, I think that's what I was drawn to. I mean, when I first got involved in TV, it was exciting, and I really enjoyed it. And I spent about the first 9 years of my career exclusively writing television for different shows. But over time, that's the part of it that began to wear on me. You know, look, film, whether it's TV or motion pictures, film is a collaborative medium. You know, it requires many people to make a project. So you're working with other writers, you're working with producers, directors, actors, and everyone has input, and you're constantly getting notes to change. And that was fun for a time, especially when you're working with really talented, creative people, because I'll take a good idea from anybody. You know, you give me an idea that makes the thing I'm writing better, I'm there. I'm all about that. But I wanted to express myself I wanted to tell stories that were from my point of view, that were personal to me, and I didn't want to have to get permission from someone else to write that story. I just wanted to write it. And then I wanted to write it my way. And that was really the draw, the lure for being a novelist. So, you know, after a few years of the TV, I decided, well, I want to go back to my roots, meaning prose, and I want to try to write the books I always thought I would want to write. So I did. I set about transitioning my career. It wasn't easy. Before The Monkey's Raincoat, which was my first published novel, I wrote two novel-length manuscripts. They were so awful, I didn't even bother to submit them. Even I knew they were awful. But that was me learning to write a book. And then The Monkey's Raincoat, it worked.
It won every prize.
I didn't know. I just wanted to tell a story. You know, I believed in the story. I liked these characters. The fact that when it was published, it won all those awards, and so many readers started flocking to Elvis Cole. I never anticipated any of that would happen. I mean, I'm glad it did. I'm thrilled. But that sure wasn't in my head. I just wanted to write a book I could sell that wouldn't embarrass me.
And you came out with a character. Of course, Elvis Cole is, you know, there's so much depth to him. Of course, in those early books, and when you're writing about Elvis and Joe, they are Vietnam veterans. They're still Vietnam veterans, but they don't age at all. But Elvis is so real. To your readers, because they know about the Mickey Mouse phone, and they know about what kind of coffee mug he has, and I love there's a lightness. You know, he's a private eye, and the sometimes the crimes are very serious and very horrific, but always there's this lightness between him and the other characters, and I think it just works so beautifully.
I appreciate that, Patsy. Thanks. That kind of all writers are readers first, right? And so I'm writing for me, the reader part of me, and those are character traits that I find appealing. You know, if I did not write these things, If I wasn't the writer of the Elvis Cole novels, then I would be the audience. I mean, I would be the person. I would want to read that book. I would want to read The Wanted because of those elements that you're talking about. You know, I enjoy them as a reader. Here's Elvis Cole. He's a fully formed character. He's got a sense of humor. I like people with senses of humor. He tries not to take himself or the world too seriously. At the same time, you know, there's a touch of the you know, he's been around, so there's an aspect of irony and of the jaded to him. He's not cynical, but he can be cynical.
Now in the new book,
anyone who works in law enforcement is like that, and I just want him to be a multifaceted, real character that people can relate to, and I think he is.
I think so too. And in the new book, The Wanted, there's sort of a little bit of a shades of The Monkey's Raincoat, because in The Monkey's Raincoat there was a woman who had trouble with disappearing family, and in the new book, of course, you really write a very compelling story about a mother who's worried about her son and calls in Elvis to help her find out what he's up to. And I don't want to give too much away, but I do love this prologue. I like prologue. Some people, there was this fashion, oh, don't write a prologue. But this prologue is so necessary to the story, and I love this prologue.
Oh, you're talking about Harvey and Stem, the bad guys.
Yeah.
Right, that prologue. Yeah, listen. It's a prologue, but as you say, it's necessary. So they set the tone for everything that's going to come. Just as Elvis Cole, my main character, to be multidimensional, to be fully formed and accessible, pardon me, I decided I wanted that for the bad guys. I hate one-note bad guys. You know, cardboard cutout, you know, figures. You know, here's a guy lurking in the shadows with a knife. That kind of guy. I hate him. So I wanted to create almost like the bad side mirror reflection of Elvis and Joe. Harvey and Stems, they are bad guys. They're murderers. But I thought, you know, they're also partners who've been at this game a long time. They have a lot of shared experience. They have histories, personal histories. They have things they do away from each other. They have lives. So I said, I wanted to treat them just like any two other guys. You know, let me see these two men relate to each other as they really would. And so I just let them talk. And I let them tell me what their lives were like. And that was enormously freeing for me because sometimes they'd make me laugh. Sometimes they'd make me cringe. They'd say horrible things, and they certainly do horrible things. But I just really found them super entertaining. They were among my most favorite scenes to write in the book.
Well, I think so. And they're among my most favorite scenes to read because, as you said, there is a dimension to them. Well, you know, in all of your books, I always find sometimes just little things in your books that I love. And one of them, I was reading, I come upon June bugs bouncing off light. And I was thinking, you know, the modern young kids, I don't know if they even know what a June bug is because they spend all their time, you know, inside and they spend all their time looking at their iPhones. And I stopped for a moment and I said, oh, that's nice. I hadn't thought about June bugs in a long time.
Well, you can't grow up in Louisiana or even here in L.A. and not know what June bugs are because they bounce off windows and lights all the time.
Well, I like that.
Oh, good. I'm glad you do.
And I also like that peaches are friendly. You know, I never thought about that because there are a lot, you know, I'm here in Florida, of course, and we have a lot of peach-colored houses, which I love because they are friendly. They're nicer than gray houses. I don't like when people paint their houses all gray. And so I love that also. Now I will always think about that when I'm looking at the peach-colored houses around here.
This is one of the things I love about Elvis Cole, because when he describes the world around him, he describes it in ways that only he would give us. And, of course, that's me. You know, that's the writer shaping the story and creating the character and whatnot. But those are the very thing you're saying now. Those are the aspects of Elvis Cole that I think so many people find appealing. His worldview is really what you read when you get the book. And his worldview is just really enjoyable to be a part of. It's all, you know, I mean, there's also a lot of thriller stuff and thrilling things. But you're seeing the world through Elvis Cole's eyes, and Elvis Cole's pretty unique.
Exactly. And as I said, I love all these little things that you have sprinkled throughout the book. And sometimes it just, you know, you can stop and sort of smile and say, oh, I like the way he's thinking. I like it. So, you know, you are, of course, you're an amazing author. And it's just so thrilling always to have someone who is able to write a book that one can visualize. And I think that, you know, comes, of course, from the experience with television, that you really take the listener, well, the reader, on a ride with you through Los Angeles. And as you said, Los Angeles is, you do Los Angeles better than anybody. The Los Angeles that, you know, Logan's, you know, Elvis sees is just, I don't know, it's just, it's so real.
Oh, good. I love Los Angeles. That's why I live here. And I think it's that love and fascination that I have for L.A. It comes through in what Elvis Cole says, you know, because he's my lens. But as I said earlier, you know, L.A. is a character in the books. It should be real, alive, and vibrant. The appeal that I find here, I want to translate into the books so that people, wherever they are reading the novel, can feel like they're here too.
Well, as a matter of fact, I was thinking about you during all the terrible fires, because one of the things that Elvis had said is that next to riots and earthquakes, fires are our largest spectator sport. And unfortunately, that was true recently.
Horribly true. Horribly true. It was, a terrible time. I mean, the Northeast is getting their cold and their bomb cyclone now, but we had our fires a month ago, and it was a real conflagration. I'd never seen so much smoke in the air, ash on the ground out here. It was not a pleasant time, but I'm sure that'll find its way into a book in the future.
I want to thank you so much for being on the program today, because what did you feel when you were, selected as a mystery writer of America Grandmaster? That put you in pretty great company. Among them, Lawrence Block, who is a favorite of mine. And, of course, Lee Child was on a month ago. And, he loves your books. He is one of your biggest fans.
Well, I'm one of his biggest fans. You know, people have fun with Lee and I. I'm a reacher creature. I've read Lee since the beginning, and he's one of my go-to authors. And I'm sure, I get tons of questions when I go out and I meet with readers or people come to my Facebook page or whatever, and they always ask the same question. Okay, if Jack Reacher and Joe Pike were to fight, who would win? And I'm sure Lee gets that too. But we have fun with that, and it's great because I'm a big fan of his work.
Well, I am a big fan of your work, and I want to thank you so much for being on today. It's been a real thrill for me and a real honor. As I said, my listeners are always asking me, how can I become, a better writer? And I always tell them, you have to read well. You have to read books, of course, not just by the type of books that you want to write, because it's wonderful if you want to write a thriller to read all the great writers like you and Lee, but also to read classical books, to read more. And when you're reading, what do you like to read other than, the authors that you can't select a favorite author, because
I understand. I couldn't agree more with you. I think people need to read broadly and eclectically. Reading more is perfect advice. Read everything. Read all genres. Because you know why? Because there's lessons to be learned everywhere. There's things to learn from everyone. Even in books you don't like, you're learning. You're learning what you don't like. You're learning, well, why am I not enjoying this? What is it about this that I'm not enjoying? And if you figure those things out, then you've learned something. And I preach that to young writers all the time. Don't just read one thing. If you love my books and you want to write like me, still, don't just read me. Read everybody. Don't just read thrillers or detective novels. Read cozies, read romance novels, read science fiction and fantasy, read historical fiction. All of those things have something to offer people. And I try to do that in real. I don't have as much time to read as I used to, and I also have to do a lot of nonfiction reading, which takes up a lot of time for me. But I really encourage people to read broadly, because you never know when you're going to discover something you truly loved that's totally a surprise for you.
That's true. I'm one of those readers. I read everything. I read everything I can lay my hands on, and it is such a joy to find something that you never expected to enjoy. So, I just want to, again, thank you for this advice. I'm going to put that on my Facebook. I know that you have like a zillion people on your Facebook page, because people just love to follow you, and you're very funny. You're very funny. I love all the stories about all the women who want to marry either Elvis Cole, Joe Pike, or you. But I think you're taken.
I am taken. But I've really had fun speaking with you, Patsy. I mean, it's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you again. And everybody get this pre-order because it's wonderful to pre-order. It's always exciting. I think it's always, you know, I'm sorry. It's not pre-order. It's already out. Well,
we're out now. Yeah, you can buy it now anywhere.
It's December 26th. It came out after Christmas. Okay, on Boxer Day. Perfect idea. Okay, great. Thank you again. It was wonderful to talk to you. Bye-bye, Robert.
Bye-bye, Patsy. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, good. I get them a little confused pre-order. But anyway, I get them in advance. Do you realize I get the most exciting thing I think about these books is I get them months in advance. I get the really, and sometimes I get the really, really early editions, which is really fun for me because sometimes it's so exciting to get these books before anybody else. You know, just a few people in the world have these books, and I get to read them before all of you. So I'm always so excited, and I want to thank all the publishers who send me these wonderful books. I had to give my mailman a big tip because I get all of this these books, and there's so many coming to my way, and I get to pick the authors I want, and I wanted Brad, and I wanted Robert, because they're fantastic books, and you will enjoy both of them. And Brad's book is coming out on the 9th, pre-order. Robert's book is out. Beautiful editions, beautiful, nice, big books. They don't cheat us here on these books. I get upset when the books are too short. There's a few authors who are, like, shortening their books, and I don't want a 260-page book. I like this nice, thick book. And the funny thing is, sometimes these thick books, they're so action-packed, and they move so quickly, and the writing is so good that you're just flowing through them, and you say, oh my goodness, I read that entire book in 2 days, and you think, wow, I have to go back and read parts of it again. So both of these authors are wonderful, and I am very, very honored that they started off their year with talking to me here on Joy on Paper. I didn't really have time too much for commercials today. Should we run a few commercials, Ed? Okay, we're going to run 2 commercials because I need money.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. My employees and I would like to thank you for making MyPillow possible. Years ago, when I invented MyPillow, I thought I was the only one out there with problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I'd flip-flop all night or wake up with a sore neck or headache. So that's why I invented MyPillow. You can adjust MyPillow's patented fill to your exact individual needs to help you get to sleep faster and stay there longer to get the quality sleep you need. I back it with my 10-year warranty and my 60-day money-back guarantee. And now to thank you, I'm bringing back my best offer ever. Buy one of my MyPillows and get another one absolutely free.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY. P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I have a few minutes before the end of the show, and I'm 2 things I wanted to remind you. It is the beginning of the month, and Irene Goodman, one of the best agents in New York City, offers a critique every month at the beginning of the month. You can it's an auction for charity. She auctions off the critique, and it is a wonderful critique. If you are a serious author, you know that you have to invest in yourself, and one of the best things you can do for your career is to get a critique from a very influential and important person in New York City, and Irene is that, and Irene Goodman, literaryagency.com is the website. You can go there, and there is a button there. You can click on it and join in the auction and see if you can be a winner this month. The price varies every month, so I can't tell you exactly what it would be, from $250 to maybe $500, something like that. But put in your bid and see if you can snag this critique. It will be a very thorough critique, and it will talk not just about your books, but also about the market for your book and all sorts of details that you really need to concentrate on in order to get representation from a major literary agent. Now, Irene doesn't promise to represent you when you do the critique, but she will. Her advice will help you get in the right direction, and all authors need that. Now, I'm going to end the program today with a tribute to Captain Jerry Yellen. As all of you know, he was on the program 3 weeks ago, and it was a very wonderful event for me because I have been very deeply involved with the United States Air Force in promoting a project called Forgotten F-105 Warriors. I love the pilots, and I have been so thrilled and honored to be able to talk to so many, many wonderful pilots, including Colonel Leo Thorsness, who was on Joy on Paper. And, of course, he was the Medal of Honor recipient for his fantastic missions during Operation Rolling Thunder in Vietnam. Now, Captain Jerry Yellen was the last fighter pilot, and his book is called The Last Fighter Pilot, The True Story of the Final Combat Mission of World War II. It was written by Don Brown, of course, who is a fantastic author. And he sat down with Jerry, who was over 90 at the time. And they wrote this wonderful book talking about this last flight, the last combat mission when a small group of planes were sent after the bombing in Nagasaki and the Japanese had not surrendered yet. Jerry Yellen was the captain of the last flight to do a bombing. Now, you know, I just loved talking to him, and I had no idea when he was on that he had fallen at the time. But that shows the kind of courage of a man like him. So we're going to end the program with a tribute in music to the wonderful and brave pilots who have protected our country over the years, and with particular thanks to Jerry Yellen. I hope that Don Brown's going to be on the program soon so we can talk more about this wonderful thing. And we're now going to play a song that I want to play on the way out today. Bye-bye, and thanks.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City Tampa Bay WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
It's time for the Thursday edition of Canada Calling, the news from home for Bay.